We're talking about early gay history in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Stonewall riots, New York City, politician Harvey Milk, San Francisco. Gay history in our country isn't just confined to our coasts. There are many stories to tell about the development of gay communities on our Third Coast, and especially here in Wisconsin prior to the Stonewall riots. Are you a member of the LGBT community? How are you celebrating Pride? Have you reflected on the 50-year anniversary of Stonewall? Share your thoughts, your memories, your stories. They're all welcome. 800-642-1234. A Madison-based activist and historian accumulated dozens upon dozens of boxes of historical newspaper clippings, firsthand accounts, writings, old photos, memorabilia through the decades, what he calls his gay archive. Richard Dick Wagner finally got to go through those boxes in retirement and do a lot more research and digging. The result is his new book, We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History. He was the first openly gay member of the Dane County Board of Supervisors. He also co-chaired the Wisconsin Governor's Council on Lesbian and Gay Issues, the first in the nation. Dick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
So today, a really important day marking 50 years since the Stonewall riots in New York City, which are often called a catalyst of the gay rights movement. And you take a bit of issue with that because you have shown here in this book there is so much more leading up to the Stonewall riots. When you look at the title of your book, We've Been Here All Along, what are you trying to underscore there in that history?
Well, the title, to my mind, has sort of two prongs. One is that there is a long gay and lesbian history and trans people in the state well before Stonewall, and I'm covering those stories. The other is the emphasis that it didn't all happen on the coast and that, you know, if you're thinking flyover country doesn't have a gay history, you're totally mistaken. And so that's the point of the title, really.
Why did you want to look at Wisconsin stories, particularly close up under the microscope, the good and the bad, across two centuries of gay life?
Well, I've sometimes joked that the sort of glass half full story on that, glass half empty, rather, is that there's been rampant homophobia in this state, as there has been in a lot of America, and that it's really the stories of a remarkable few who resisted that homophobia and found ways to live their lives despite it in this state. The importance of that is that gay liberation is a matter of personal agency. In other words, you yourself have to decide who you are, and you have to be willing to affirm that. And there's a lot of people pre-Stonewall who did that in Wisconsin, and that's the remarkable stories that I've tried to uncover.
Let's look at some of those stories, starting with Oscar Wilde, who was this world-famous playwright and poet in the 1880s. Right. He was charged with gross indecency in the trials just gained global attention, so many headlines. Can you tell us what was happening with Oscar Wilde?
Well, Wilde, interestingly enough, had actually toured America in 1882, and he had come to Racine, and he'd been in Milwaukee and actually in Dubuque, right across the river from southwestern Wisconsin. And he was mainly lecturing on the English Renaissance and topics like that. But in 1895, there were a series of three trials, actually, in London. And London was then the world's capital, so things that happened there got reverberated around the world then. And so I thought maybe the Wisconsin press might have covered it. It turns out they did extensively. Some Wisconsin papers carried 30 stories in the period of about a month and a half. And that was the same number of stories that major New York papers like The Sun and The World also carried. So it was extensively covered. There were editorials and all the local headlines that were written here in Wisconsin. It gives you a base attitude. It's like a poll about homosexuality in the late 19th century. It's all negative. But it gives you a whole series of themes about criminality, cultural suppression, other things that pop up in these news stories and headlines.
So it's like a window into the world through what is happening around Oscar Wilde.
Right, and how they're reporting it, so that the newspapers and the editors' opinions really tell you, you know, they view this all sort of like a sickness and otherness and un-American even. They claim, oh, it's British, you know, which is, of course, totally not true, but that's, you know.
Oh, it's them, not us.
Right, yes, right, 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 oh. right.
We're talking about Wisconsin's early gay history with Dick Wagner, who has a new book called We've Been Here All Along. We want to hear from you this hour. What questions do you have? What do you want to know about gay life in Wisconsin decades or centuries ago? What changes have you noticed during your own life? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dick, around the same time as this, there are several Wisconsin cities expanding, Milwaukee, Madison, and Superior. And so with that urban growth come social ills. At least that was the popular thought at that time. How did religious leaders attempt to kind of combat that, quell that, what they called vices?
Well, all of this massive social change by urbanization caused a lot of concern about traditional moralists. And they saw perhaps a couple houses of prostitution become a whole red light district. That was a concern. And so Wisconsin joined in 1913 with an anti-vice commission. Senator Howard Teasdale from Sparta was chair of that. And there were these similarly around the country. Chicago, which is our nearby metropolis, they had one in 1911, which extensively covered the homosexual community in Chicago as well. And actually, in 1908, Milwaukee had been named one of the 8 homosexual capitals of America. So they uncovered some homosexual vice in the Teasdale investigative reports, though they didn't include them in the report, though the Chicago report had. But they did include the statutes against sexual perversion as part of the vice issues that were listed in the state. Teasdale mainly had an interest in prohibition, and so he was trying to link prostitution to alcohol. And so a lot of his focus was on the saloons and things like that.
Why was Milwaukee called out as the homosexual capital of the world? What was happening there?
Well, obviously they had a very active number of gay folks who lived there. Looking at the Milwaukee police reports, you can see that each year in the pre-war period, they had a number of arrests. Number of arrests are really just the surface of the issue, that they're missing most of the activity far and away. A lot of the cities that were so identified were German heritage cities, St. Louis and Chicago, Philadelphia, New York. They all had heavy German communities. And the earliest homosexual activity rights issue came from Germany as well, Magnus Hirschfeld and his sex reform laws.
There was a UW researcher who wanted to learn more about sodomy, and this was John Gillen, and he had this prisoner study in Waupun.
Right. His real interest in his book, Crimogenesis, was about the origins of crime, and so he was trying to look at origins. And so he did 3 classes. He did murderers. He did sodom. Sexual offenders, which were mainly the sodomy people who were in Waupun, and then he did major property thefts. It was remarkable that he had a lot of researchers who went up and they took case histories from these prisoners. When they were literate, he allowed them to write their own autobiographies. Mm. And one of them wrote a 68-page autobiography about his life, including a very active sexual life. Another did a 29-page one. And so you have these remarkable voices of gay men coming from the 1930s in their own words, trying to express how they had lived their lives. And
the book is called We've Been Here All Along. Dick Wagner stays with us as our guide through this detailed history, much of it coming from his personal archives. Your questions, your stories, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. Do you remember when Wisconsin took the historic steps of electing several openly gay members of Congress? Let's talk about it. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. The Today is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, and we're talking about early gay history leading up to 1969 here in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and the new book is called We've Been Here All Along, and historian Dick Wagner is with us to discuss his first of two volumes of gay history in Wisconsin, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And his book makes connections all over the state, shining a light on the history. He writes, prior to the 21st century, the LGBT community was known variously as the gay community or the gay and lesbian community. They developed a sense of community that permitted many to reject the label of sickness applied to them. What questions do you have about what our state was like during social and political movements of the last century? Is there a gay Wisconsinite whose story you wish to share? Join in at 800-642-1234, and Dick Wagner stays with us through the hour. Dick, we are talking there about John Gillen's study before the break. How did his study change how people understood homosexuality?
Well, a couple ways. First, he provided a more detailed portrait. He showed that most of these individuals had had simply a bench trial before a judge. There was no jury, no defense attorney. So it was sort of like summary justice that they faced. But he also did an essay in his book about the scientific discussions about homosexuality that were beginning to take place. And he himself was a very good sociologist. And so he was trying to shift the dialogue from criminality to more of a social science point of view. And it had been that the sodomy statute was a crimes against nature going back to the Tudor time. So it was a very ancient kind of a law criminally. And he tried to change that. There's also the view that by gay men and some other cases where lesbians participated in these studies, they tried to seize the narrative from that dominant narrative about criminality and tried to present their own lives as a counter-narrative to the main narratives about how both criminal or sick they might be. And so their courage in participating in the study was another important thing to understand.
Well, let's zoom out a bit and look at some more people here breaking barriers for LGBT Wisconsinites. You feature the story of Glenway Westcott, and he was a writer who chronicled how he felt unwelcome in here in Wisconsin. What did you learn about Westcott and his lifestyle?
Well, Westcott was from near Hartford, he went to Chicago, where he met his partner, Monroe Wheeler. They traveled to Europe. Westcott had published a number of regional kinds of things that marked him as a Wisconsin writer, The Grandmothers. And then he wrote a short story, which became the title of his book of short stories, is Goodbye, Wisconsin. And he talked about being back for a visit and that he was wearing his French beret that he had acquired in Europe. And his brother basically said, don't do that in the town, that it's too strange. And in his story, he also makes literary references in a number of cases to other homosexual writers that a literary person might know, though the average person might not. So basically, he said he couldn't live here, and he went off and lived in New York. Actually, they had a house in Greenwich Village on Christopher Street. They got very involved with other gay activities. They helped put people in touch with Kinsey when he was doing his research on homosexuality. And they also brought the English novel by A.M. Forster, Morris, to America for its posthumous publication. And he lived long enough to be involved with some of the early gay liberation stuff in New York as well.
Ted Pierce graces the cover of your book, right. And he lived in Madison on Willie Street, yep. And he described it as a most gracious and always interesting street. Can you tell us about Ted Pierce and his place?
Sure. Ted lived almost all of his life there on Williamson Street, and his father had been a porter, which was a prestigious job for the African-American community in those days. And then he got appointed as executive office messenger by Governor Bob La Follette Sr. And the family also ran a tailor shop in the Lorraine Hotel, which was also the fashionable hotel in town at that point. And so Ted worked in the tailor shop, and he knew of sort of the sexual underworld at the Lorraine Hotel, where bellhops and elevator operators might provide sexual favors for some of the guests as well. And he met on the square Willard Motley, who was an African-American novelist whose novels were praised by Eleanor Roosevelt in her column Day by Day, and several were made into Hollywood movies with very major stars. And he kept a 30-year correspondence with Motley.
And you knew him?
I knew Ted, yes. He was to my house for dinner, and I would talk with him on the streets. There's one phrase that described him as Madison's boulevardier, which was a French term, which he would have loved. The family had Louisiana roots, and he always was sprinkling his various remarks with French terms as well.
What did you two talk about?
We talked about the folks that he knew, particularly of sort of this Jennifer Street gay salon. The house that I happened to live in was owned by two gay men in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, and they formed quite a large circle of folks who built a network of support, and there was a description of them of how they would encourage friendship and anyone was welcome, and they served Café Diablo and other kinds of sort of slightly esoteric things.
What a history, if the walls could talk.
Right. Well, I feel like Joe and Keith have been my ghosts over my shoulder as I've been writing this. Now, get that right. Get that right.
Dick Wagner is a historian and author. The new book is called We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History. And you can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of the LGBT community? How are you celebrating Pride Month? What questions do you have about what our state was like during social and political movements of the last century? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So lesbians, although they weren't yet called that, also had to hide their sexuality in the first half of the 20th century. Women's colleges and art communities served as a sort of haven for gay women. Can you tell us the story of Charlotte Partridge and Miriam Frink?
Right. The two women met at Milwaukee Downer College, a female college. Presently, the buildings are part of the UW-Milwaukee, UW-Wisconsin-Milwaukee campus, though Downer itself merged with Lawrence and Appleton. And they used to live on campus, and then they decided they were going to move off to a joint apartment. They had what would be termed a domestic friendship in those days, which was, again, a kind of a coded language for two women living together in a relationship. And Charlotte was the artist, and together they founded the Layton School for the Arts in the basement of the Layton Galleries. They sort of shocked Milwaukee because they had live nude modeling for art classes. Miriam,
which is pretty standard today.
Oh yeah, standard today. I mean, but you know, back in those days, right. They had gay faculty and gay students as part of the art school, and they were involved with the Wisconsin New Deal arts programs, and Charlotte ran those. But when she had to step down for a period, Miriam stepped in and ran it, and then she stepped down again, and Charlotte picked it up again. So they had a partnership that was very strong. They built a studio that Charlotte designed on Fox Point, and then a house out in suburban Thienesville that Charlotte also designed. They went out west, and Miriam got herself a pistol for the trip out west, so she was sort of a strong character as well. And Miriam wrote about her class at Smith. She had been there for the last 2 years of her college education and noted that, like,
Smith College, out east,
a women's college again, that more than half the graduates of her class had never married. So, again, non-normative kind of behavior and not hidden, be fully explicated in some ways.
They were really influential in the design world.
Oh, yes, they were. And they were very active in Milwaukee's public life. They were both on a committee to honor Meta Berger, who was the wife of Victor Berger, the congressman from Milwaukee. And they were extremely well known in the Milwaukee community.
You feature, so many people in this book, but what did experiencing European culture during the early 20th century teach gay men here in Wisconsin?
Well, there's the famous song, How You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm, and the expatriate experience was common for a lot of people following World War I. And my first major professor at the University, Merle Curdy, talked about his own experience of doing that, going to Paris and studying at the Sorbonne. And a lot of people know sort of like Hemingway and others, Gertrude Stein, who went to Europe and were in France. But there were Wisconsinites who were gay who also went abroad and learned some of those more openness about homosexuality from the European experience. France had decriminalized homosexuality in the Napoleonic period already. And Edward Harris Heath was one. Bob Neal was another one. He went to London rather than France. But a lot of Americans did that. And, of course, Glenroy Westcott and his expatriate experience. And so they brought those stories back and they began to spread them around in Wisconsin about sort of perhaps something that was less culturally suppressed in Europe than it was here.
The book is We've Been Here All Along, and author Dick Wagner is our guide as we explore early gay history leading up to the Stonewall Riots 50 years ago today. Are you part of the LGBT community? How are you celebrating Pride? Have you been reflecting on the 50th year anniversary of Stonewall? Share your thoughts, your stories, your reflections. What questions do you have about our state and what it was like during these times? Join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, we'll look at the University of Wisconsin's impact on this historical journey. That's after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring Wisconsin's early gay history on this 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And Dick Wagner's new book is called We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History. We're exploring these untold stories of gay Wisconsinites who made their mark well before the 1969 Stonewall Riots. And Dick Wagner writes, in the 1930s, Wisconsin gay men, while needing to be discreet, could come to an acceptance of who they were. They created poetry affirming their love, and they circulated and even published such poetry. And though not officially out, they operated publicly as gay members of society in various roles like newspaper columnists and executive office staff and respected UW professors. Is there a gay Wisconsinite whose story you would like to share? Do you remember when Wisconsin took the historic steps of electing several openly gay members of Congress? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. And historian Dick Wagner stays with us through the hour. Let's take a call now. Let's go to Shannon joining us from Wausau. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My question is in regards to Liberace, most likely one of Wisconsin's most famous gay sons. And I was wondering if it was at all known at the time he was playing around the state whether or not he was gay and what impact he had on gay culture in our state.
Great question.
There's various stories about Liberace. Actually, since you're from Wausau, one of them is that he lost his virginity in Wausau to a Green Bay Packer football player. He was not really out in any sense, even though he presented himself certainly in his later career as a very flamboyant character. He actually sued some publications that claimed he was gay and won some of those suits. You know, since it was actually a crime to do homosexual acts in Wisconsin and everywhere else in the country, you didn't really want to admit you were. The penalty was 1 to 5 years in Waupun. So, no, he wasn't admitting, but his fabulousness certainly did have an impact on not only Wisconsin culture, but on American culture as well.
Shannon, thanks so much for the call. Let's look at the University of Wisconsin for a moment, playing a part in this history. In the 30s, you found one case of homosexuality being disciplined at UW-Madison. That changed after the war. What did that look like on campuses?
Well, on the Madison campus and from some correspondence with other universities, there's a reference to an outbreak of homosexuality. During World War II, a lot of men and women were taken away from their traditional communities where sort of the traditional mores would have dominated. They were facing possibly death if they were in battle. And so there was a more willingness to experiment, and a lot of them discovered homosexuality during the war. Even though the armed forces had tried to screen out all homosexuals, they failed miserably in that. But that started sort of the medicalization or sickness themes about homosexuality. And so the university tried to take what they thought was an enlightened view of that if they discovered someone was homosexual. And they had what they called therapeutic discipline, which meant that they suspended a student and sent him off to a psychiatrist and would not readmit him until the psychiatrist had basically said that he was cured or willing to come back and able to come back to the university.
What was police like in handling people who were gay?
Campus police and city police were both sort of pretty severe. There's some actually 25 interrogatories remaining from that period. And they tried to get them to fess up to homosexual activity. In fact, one of the repeated questions was, did you commit the homosexual act? And I'm sure that gay folks had more imagination then than the police did about what they could possibly do. But a lot of those arrested ended up in trial. And some of them got prison sentences. Certainly most were sent to psychiatrists for help. And that was actually the milder form of the post-war experience, because the legislature passed a sexual psychopath law. And that would have permitted a DA to send anybody to a prison, even if they hadn't committed a sexual crime, just to be diagnosed as a sexual psychopath, basically a homosexual, by a couple of psychiatrists, and off you could go to an institution. Clearly, probably was unconstitutional for various other complications. It never really was implemented directly, and they had to pass another law instead.
So moving ahead to the 40s and 50s, you touched on this researcher a bit earlier, Alfred Kinsey, who published reports on homosexuality. Who participated in the Kinsey studies, and what did we learn from them?
We learned that homosexuality was much more widespread than had previously been thought. And actually, a lot of folks from Wisconsin were part of Kinsey's subjects in that study. I mean, he was from the Midwest. He was at Indiana University. So a lot of his contacts were regional in the Midwest. And as I mentioned, he did have some Wisconsin sources who were feeding him names about folks. And so that also caused more of a concern about this outbreak of homosexuality as people learned that, oh, there were perhaps more. In 1948, there was an investigation of Haresfoot, which was a cross-dressing theatrical troupe on the university. And it tended to attract gay men. So the university wanted to sort of find some way to try and screen them out. It was not very effective, but they were, raising those kinds of concerns and investigations.
Talking about Wisconsin's early gay history with Dick Wagner, the new book is called We've Been Here All Along, and we want to hear from you this hour. What questions do you have? What do you want to know about gay life in Wisconsin decades or centuries ago? What changes have you noticed during your own life? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Shane now, joining us from Waupun. Shane, hi.
Hi. I just had a question for your guest about... I've lived in Waupun my whole life, and the prison system there is kind of a staple for a lot of employment. But I've never heard anything about, all the gay men from Wisconsin being sent there. That's never been brought up to me ever.
And it kind of opens up a whole window of curiosity there. You know, how many were sent, and what was that like, and did they get out?
Yes, I mean, they had prison sentences that were definite terms, though some of them actually got rearrested and went back in some instances. Homosexuality was illegal in Wisconsin. It was illegal in all states until 1961, when Illinois was the first state to decriminalize homosexuality. And so the police did lock people up after they were convicted of a trial. Milwaukee was the most where people were sent from Milwaukee to the state prison at Waupun. Oshkosh was the second area that had the most people sent to Waupun. But they came from all around the state. They came from all different ethnic backgrounds. They came from all different religious backgrounds. It was not uncommon that you had Wisconsinites who were gay men who were sent to prison.
We've been mentioning the anniversary of the Stonewall riots throughout the hour, and I'm wondering, your book leads up to that, but can you take us there on this anniversary? What was happening? What caused them? Bring us to that New York City Stonewall Inn.
Well, the young people who basically fought back at Stonewall had been sort of feeling oppressed constantly in New York by various bar raids that went on. New York had even some more oppressive laws than Wisconsin did in that case. And if you were serving homosexuals in a bar, you were tantamount to running an illegal bar in New York. So on this particular night, it was a mafia-run institution. The drinks were watered. And the police planned a raid. And they started to fight back. They tried to get a lesbian individual and put her in the police car, and she kept jumping out, and they had to keep fighting to put her back in. And then they started to throw pennies at the coppers. The crowd got so boisterous outside as they were trying to bring people out to arrest them that the police had to rush inside, and then they started to throw fire items against the bar itself. And so the police then called for more reinforcements from the local precinct, and you had 4 days of rioting going on in New York over the Stonewall Inn. And they just had enough. And so they said, no, we're not going to take this anymore. And it was little covered at the time, frankly. Stonewall has become a marker since then. There was like almost Zippo coverage in the Wisconsin press. But immediately after, gay organizations began to form. In New York, you had the Gay Liberation Front, Gay Activist Alliance. June was Stonewall. By the fall, around Halloween in Madison, you had the Madison Alliance for Homosexual Equality that was founded. By spring of the next year, you had the Gay People's Union in Milwaukee that was founded. So it caused a whole new strain of activists who finally realized that the tactics that they had seen in both the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, and the women's movement could be used by the lesbian and gay community as well to fight back.
So that's why you hear it being called this turning point in the modern gay rights movement,
right?
That it took a while to be able to realize that even.
Right. And there were gay organizations before this that had been established mainly in California. There was the Mattachine Society. There was the Daughters of Bilitis, which is in San Francisco. Mattachine was in Los Angeles. There was one magazine that came out of Los Angeles as well. But these were what were termed homophile organizations. They sought to increase understanding, and they sought to educate people about homosexuality. But they didn't do confrontational tactics. And actually, 1965, there was a picket in front of Independence Hall demanding rights for homosexuals. But it was a very polite picket. All the men had to wear coats and ties. The ladies had to wear dresses. And so it was sort of not confrontational. And the street kids who fought back at Stonewall were very confrontational. And it started a whole new episode.
Dick Wagner's book is called We've Been Here All Along, chronicling Wisconsin's early gay history leading up to the Stonewall riots. Second volume, by the way, will be coming out in next June. What are your questions about Wisconsin's early gay history? Was there a gay-friendly space or bar in your community that has faded away since? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and 50 years ago today was a turning point for gay rights in America, the Stonewall riots. But author and activist Dick Wagner says there is so much more gay history that occurred long before these violent demonstrations that he uncovers in his new book. It's called We've Been Here All Along. And he writes, throughout the 20th century, decades before Stonewall, We see gay men and lesbians in Wisconsin affirming their own identities. He goes on to say that in forming gay friendships, circles of correspondence, and social clubs, they build networks and communities. And so we're getting a fuller portrait of these hidden stories this hour with your questions along the way at 800-642-1234. How did you find ways to thrive in your community despite discrimination? How should we acknowledge and celebrate Wisconsin's LGBT history? Dick Wagner stays with us for this conversation. Let's bring in another call here. Barb is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Barb.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a radio show with Kim Bartels on WMSE for 23 years. It was called Women's Music Radio, Sunday nights, 10:30 to midnight. And it was a music by and about women, primarily lesbian. And so my question is, what kind of information do you have about the women's movement in terms of music and concerts and the Women's Music Festival and that sort of thing? Or is it primarily a gay book?
I try to include information about the entire community. And actually, in the second volume is where I get to the period when women's music becomes more significant, particularly in some parts of the state. That was a significant organizing feature in La Crosse, which had a wonderful newsletter, the Leaping La Crosse News. That comes from a women's music song, The Leaping Lesbians. It has been significant, and there were other women entertainers who traveled the state, and that made part of what communities were able to draw together around as events. I just did a book launch here in Madison this past week, and I had part of Perfect Harmony Men's Course sing some songs, and I had them choose particularly Holly Near songs, including We Are a Gentle, Angry People, as part of the launch, because I thought that was important and significant for our community.
I think that there were very many lesbian performers, Teresa Trull, Meg Christian, Chris Williamson, to just name a few, as you and Holly Near, as you've mentioned. And I think that in Madison and Milwaukee, there were also very extensive women's music and lesbian related events that were occurring. And so La Crosse is part of it, but I think you also need to make sure that you include Milwaukee. And
oh, yes. Both Madison and Milwaukee had lesbian variety shows that were just, you know, fantastically received. And there was lots of other activities about music going on in Milwaukee and Madison, too.
Well, staying on the entertainment scene, gay bars have long been a haven for this community. And as early as the 60s, Milwaukee alone had 12. You studied guidebooks to get information on these places. What did you learn?
Well, there was one statement that was made in some of the research that the only place you could be gay was either in bed or in a gay bar, because you couldn't be out at work or any other place to. So they were important social circles, particularly following World War II and leading up to Stonewall. There were guides to them that talked about the various gay bars, and they were all around the state. Some were gay-friendly rather than specifically gay in that regard. But they were very important places for the community to exchange information. They also, when we became a more activist place, were sponsors of various events, particularly gay sporting events. They would sponsor teams, and the Saturday Softball League over in Milwaukee was very associated with the bar movement over there. And so they were significant in the community, and a lot of the bar owners, like Rodney Scheel here in Madison, were very generous to the community, helping with early AIDS activities as well.
How has Wisconsin's movement changed since the 2015 Supreme Court ruling that allows for same-sex marriage?
In some ways, I think people felt that it was over, that we had now achieved a major goal, and we did. But that hasn't meant that homophobia has gone away, that there's still lots of places in this state where being gay is not very safe and people don't feel comfortable coming out. The Marathon County Board just had a big debate over whether they would do a resolution celebrating Pride Month in this state here in 2019. And that it passed, but it wasn't an overwhelming vote. So I think the community needs to continue to remain active. And there's so many young people in schools who don't have any information or role models that they could follow. And so one of the things that we need to do is continue efforts like G-Safe and Gay-Straight Alliances so that people feel that they can come out when they want to and be comfortable with it.
Why aren't there the role models? Why don't you see the...
It's in part because the community gets erased so often from the stories that there's no teaching of gay history for the most part in any schools in this state. So how would you know who you are? There was a remarkable story told about a young man who grew up in a school in southwest Wisconsin, and he was in the school choir, and they were singing a whole bunch of music that was written by gay men, but he was never told they were written by gay men. So he was denied his heritage in the school because of either ignorance or erasure about what exists for gay and lesbian culture and trans persons as well.
You are so ingrained in this history, and you were the first openly gay member of the Dane County Board of Supervisors, been an activist for marriage equality. And it's very clear that part of the we in this title is you. How did your involvement in the gay community help you through your research?
Actually, it was very useful because I would come across people and they would say, oh, do you know about this? Or here's a lead that you should look into. Will Fellows, who is an historian from the Milwaukee area, was very useful in providing lots of good information and leads. And the other thing is that you can read behind some of the coded language and see what is there that somebody else would just sort of pass over. Some of the archives that I would look at, which I found very rich, the archivist thought, oh, there's nothing in there. And no, they didn't know what they were seeing, and I could see what was there.
In what way?
One of the things is that in looking at the Ted Pierce papers, he had a remarkable correspondence, which was saved, with people all around the country that had originally a Madison or Wisconsin origin. And so you saw how he was building up a network of people who would talk about things. He even had correspondence with Merce Cunningham, the New York dancer, very well known, who was a gay man. And so you saw ways that gay people could transmit information and find support that maybe an unknowing archivist thought, oh, there's nothing there.
What can you tell us about the next volume that is in production, scheduled for June of next year? Where does this history take us?
Well, Wisconsin has a remarkable political story, we were the first state to pass a gay rights law in 1982. That doesn't happen without a lot of work to get there. And a lot of histories have been written about cities in terms of gay history or lesbian history, but very few have actually focused on the state level. And I wanted to do that because I'd been involved with that. I had gone to state Democratic conventions in the 70s fighting for gay rights planks in that. But it wouldn't have passed in 82 without bipartisan support, with both Republicans and Democrats supporting that law. Also in the 80s, there was a whole series of other legislation that passed. There was AIDS confidentiality. There were student protections for high school and grade school students for non-discrimination. There was also a hate crimes law that was passed that included hate crimes based on sexual orientation, and that went all the way to the Supreme Court in a case that upheld it. The other remarkable story, of course, in Wisconsin is that we have out-elected officials, and the first out lesbian in the country, I believe, was Judy Greenspan, who ran in 1973 for the Madison School Board. Gays and lesbians have been denied access to speak in high schools in Madison. And so as a candidate for the school board, she was on panels in high schools. And so she was speaking where she had been denied.
So much history. Right. Dick Wagner, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Dick Wagner is author of the new book, We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. The next volume coming out called Coming Out, Moving Forward, coming out next year. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.